Blog Talk.
Hello, good morning. Welcome to the Dr. Cappuccino Show, and today we have our very interesting guest again, Dr. Colonel William Harrison. Most of you heard him last week. And Dr. Harrison, are you on the line? Hello? Dr. Harrison, are you on the line?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, thank
yes,
you
Dr.
very much. Yes. Yes. Hi, Doctor. Hi, Colonel. Hi, Reverend. You're an everything man. Thank you again for tuning in from your last appearance on the show last Saturday. And we have guests calling in even as I'm talking right now. Welcome, you guys, to the Dr. Cappuccino Show. Last week, you heard Dr. Colonel Harrison, William Harrison, who is a 38-year veteran with the police department back east, and he's also a former police for Capitol Heights, Maryland, and now we found out also he is a reverend, so he's wearing a lot of hats. Welcome back again to the show, Dr. Harrison. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Cappuccino. Thank you for inviting me to the show again, and I trust and hope that you are doing equally well.
Yes, I am. Well, we had to invite you back because you had quite a few there on the call listening, wanting to hear what a former chief of police has to say as far as what's going on in the world, and who better to choose than someone with your background. Dr. Harrison, can you tell us about your role as the Speaker of the Floor for the Platform for Peace? Many wanted to know what that was. Can you reiterate on that?
Yes, certainly, Dr. Cappuccino. Good morning to the listening audience. The International Platform for Peace is an organization that advocates for peace in family, peace in communities, peace throughout our cities, our counties, our states, and peace throughout the world. It was founded under the principle of 1,000 women wearing white and 100 men wearing black in a parade to highlight the awareness and the need for peace. And this culminated January 2016, an organizing founder, of course, yours truly, our talk show host. And so as a result, I'm involved in that initiative. We have a board, and we have a website, and we are soliciting people to come together and help us advocate for peace through prayer tents and witnessing to people and other mediums, electronic mediums and other avenues.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. Now, in light of what's been going on internationally as well as nationwide, do you think people are really interested in peace? You know, they're going to and fro, they're handling their business affairs, they're handling their family affairs, and just doesn't seem like people are interested in peace. They might want quietness and more money in their life, but it doesn't seem like they're interested in peace. What can you say about that, sir?
From a social point of view, I believe people are interested in peace. But from a law enforcement point of view, people only seem to seek peace whenever there is chaos or our country unfortunately suffer a terrorist attack or a vast number of people get killed in a mass shooting rampage. Then people seem to reflect and start thinking about peace. Absence of that, people sort of turn a blind eye to peace because we're so caught up in our day-to-day personal affairs, business affairs, and we don't take time to acknowledge each other and with respect to saying words of comfort and conciliatory words And even teaching it to the children. Peace is something that has to be begin within oneself. If I'm in turmoil within, then that turmoil is going to come on the outside. If I have peace within me, then you'll see a peaceful disposition displayed on the outside. And so right now we see chaos being displayed by most of our the American people because there's chaos within their personal lives. We got to go back to the founding principles of family, friends, faith, and family, teaching our children the principles of morality and peace and love and kindness and those kinds of things that will keep them, and then they'll have respect not only for themselves but also for others that they meet along life's way.
Well, that surely sounds wonderful, because right now you can see that the world is in need of something or someone to step forward, and as far as peace is concerned, grab hold and say, okay, I certainly am on the march for peace and anything that peace can bring to me and my surroundings. But now I understand that you had the pleasure as keynote for the Pastors on the Wall for America event, and it's a weekend conference is taking place there in Washington, D.C., March 16th, 17th, and 18th. Now, your invitation or bulletin states some of the topics will be the way out of chaos, tents of prayer, state by state, and America, of course, under siege. Can you address very briefly on those topics, conversations or the speaker might be talking about or referring to? Let's start with the way out of chaos. What is that topic going to do for those that attend?
Chaos, of course, is the absence of peace. And it's the opposite of peace. And so chaos, we'll be highlighting the fact that society seemingly is out of control because we're having these shootings occurring across the country, these mass shootings, mass killings that are senseless. And so that creates chaos within certain communities, within certain environments, whether it's a public school or whether it's a college campus or whether it's within a private community or a concert such as in Las Vegas and so forth in the past. So we're going to be talking about the chaos, how we can get chaos under control, working with law enforcement officers, working with the U.S. Attorney's Office at Washington, D.C., and their practitioners and other community activists to talk about what is happening, because certain things cause chaos. It starts with something as subtle as the disobedience of children in the home, and then they're smoking marijuana, and then joining gangs, and then the drug trafficking, and the prostitution trafficking, and so on, and it just disrupts the entire community. So we're going to place emphasis through those avenues with those different people, and we'll focus on the youth to try and teach our youth some salient principles, again, of love and tranquility. And youth need hope, and they need to know that violence is not the answer, particularly resorting to weapons and so forth.
Very good. Well, you know, I understand you have a book with that word chaos in its entitlement. Talk to us about your book. What is the title of the book that you've written that's really something that should be in every library and every home? Talk about your book.
Thank you for asking, Doc. The title of the book is The Answer to Civil Unrest in the Land. And the book was written a couple years ago, and I received the revelation from God that I should use my 38 years of law enforcement experience in a particular way of informing and alerting people to the potential of chaos coming to America if we don't return to basic principles. But the book starts with a historical movement going back to the 1800s during the time when people were mobilizing because there was unrest, and then it comes up through the era of the early 1900s, and certainly the turbulent 1960s, and the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. being an advocate for peace of all people from all walks of life mobilized not only this nation, but the whole world in terms of equal rights for all people, regardless of race, color, and creed. So the book has that in there, and I close the book with salient principles for law enforcement commanders and chiefs and sheriffs and practitioners and officers and citizen advocates for communities and police and public officials on how they can win the confidence of the community, get the support of the community to maintain some form of civil obedience rather than civil unrest.
My goodness, that book sounds very interesting. Is it going to be on sale March 16th, 17th, and 18th at your conference?
Yes, yes, it will be on sale. It will be available, and we're looking forward to highlighting it, and certainly looking forward to seeing those that will come and attend the conference. And of course, Lord's willing, I'll be there, and those who attend will certainly have an opportunity to not only talk with me, but get an autograph of the book as well.
Very good, and it is on sale, I believe. I think I went online last week, but it is on sale at Amazon.com. So if anyone is interested and that will not be at the conference, they can certainly approach Amazon.com. Now, you guys have also a very interesting project, too. It's called Tents of Prayers. I understand you guys are going to be getting this tent set up this year across America and on an international basis, if possible, if necessary. What is the reason behind erecting tents of prayers in just about every state that you can get into?
The reason and the thought behind tents of prayer, Dr. Carpentina, is to get advocates for peace to go out into certain respective their respective communities to be out there in the public at large, on the corners, passing out handouts, witnessing to people, telling them the importance of peace and telling them how they can come about peace. And if people have a need, and pray for people and pray for them as well without regards to religious denomination, and pray for them. So we will be encouraging them through this medium, through people on the corner, making personal contact up front and in person with handouts and just stressing the importance of it and just embracing them and letting them know they are loved regardless of what they might have done or who they are, what background they come from. And so we're doing that through this medium called Tents of Peace. And again, the Tents of Peace is neutral to religion, but it has important attributes of certain aspects of religion that will help to encourage one who may be homeless, encourage one who may be needy, to encourage one who may need food or referrals to resources and so forth.
Okay, now I just heard you say tents of peace. So are they tents of peace or are they tents of prayer?
They're tents of peace, but under the umbrella of the tents of peace, we're also offering prayer because there are people that may not think they need prayer, but they do.
Oh, okay. So it's tents of peace, but you guys are going to have on those tents of prayer to draw people there to be prayed for and to be prayed over. Is that what I'm hearing? They're tents of prayer, but you guys are naming them tents of peace.
Yes, tents of peace.
Oh, okay.
Umbrella under that, and just briefly, Doc, just want to try to solidify again. Within the scope of the Tents of Peace, we will be talking about peace. We will be sharing certain principles with people, how they can go back to their homes, their communities, and be advocates for peace. But at the same time, we'll offer prayer because prayer changes things. Not trying to force religion upon anyone, but just offering them prayer to help comfort them in case they are not at peace within themselves.
Oh, okay. Okay, because we understand here on the West Coast that prayer is ministers are holy people, spiritualists, laying hands on someone and then uttering a prayer. You know, we understand that if you rub beads, that is a prayer. You know, if you just bow your heads in silence, that's a prayer. So these tents of peace, as you call them, will also allow people to come in for individual prayer.
Absolutely. The initial invite is to talk to them about peace. But secondarily to that, prayer is available for those who desire, may be in need, and so forth. But we're advocating peace. Peace is the idea behind these tents of peace, to advocate and teach principles of peace that people can carry throughout the community, their homes, business place, workplaces, and so forth.
Okay, you know, that sounds fantastic. But is America ready to face the fact that spiritual remedies might need to be explored as a way out of chaos and other acts of injustice? Now, I'm asking that because we don't see a lot of mega church pastors out there rising up to address these issues. So do you think America, mainstream America, is actually ready to go and say, okay, you know, I need a spiritual remedy to get out of my fix. I need something spiritual to get out of my trouble. Is America ready for that? And if so, why don't we see more mega church pastors getting involved in a movement like this? This sounds like a movement.
Let me answer the question by citing a brief excerpt from the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, Doc, and this was written by Thomas Jefferson, the late Thomas Jefferson, one of our founding fathers and the Declaration of Independence, and also a former president of the United States. Thomas Jefferson writes, Congress shall not make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, Thomas Jefferson, January 1, 1802, briefly, a doc and listening officers, was echoing the language of the founder of the First Baptist Church in America, Roger Williams, who wrote this in 1644. And Roger Williams wrote a hedge, a wall of separation between the garden of the church and the wilderness of the world. He was advocating that there should be a separation between church and state. Now, America has these salient principles in the Constitution of the United States. America was found based on religious men and upon religious principles, which goes back to the Judeo-Christian faith. But America has moved away from, the people in America have moved away from that because they have forgotten what has brought us some 200 and some odd years to where we are today in terms of the age of the country. Let me give you James, one of the early organizers of the church in Jerusalem during the first century, 2,000 years ago. He says, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. So James said, when we look out for the widows and orphans and so forth, and we don't allow sin to taint us, then we are exercising pure religion. So it's more of an act than it is a word. And so we have to return to something. People always need something that they can hold on to, something they can believe in, that's above man, that's above woman, that's above child in terms of a superior being and whatever they may call that superior being. So America has to find its way back to where it needs to be. And with respect to the mega church pastors, well, some of them, I can't speak to all. I believe some of them are quiet because when we as pastors approach the government and get government grants and government aid and 501c3 non-tax status, then in a sense we compromise this First Amendment of having the right to be separate from the government regulating us, because now we've asked the government to give us these grants, give us these programs that we can use in the church, and so the government has some type of regulatory oversight over those certain churches, and so thus I believe some of the mega church pastors become silent because they're probably in that category where they have a relationship with federal and state governments with respect to grants and other programs that the government offer that's free or tax exempt. And so I don't have that here at Second Union Washington, D.C., because I want God's house here to remain autonomous so we can speak when we need to speak and we can stand on the word of God when we need to stand.
Okay, that sounds very good. Now, is it true that all religious-based churches are supposed to be under the 501c3? I know you just mentioned you don't have that. Is that something that's required there in Washington or not? Let's chat on that, because most churches here are 501c3-based. That's the only way they can accept tithes and offering and monies and go to the bank and so forth and so on. Is that something that's required there? And if not, why not?
It's my understanding that it's not required, that it's optional, because each church is, for the most part, under the Protestant umbrella. The Baptist church is autonomous. Each church has its individual leadership or pastor or overseer, if you will. And it's my understanding 501c3 is optional. It's not mandatory. In some jurisdictions it may be, but D.C. is a federal city, and so therefore there are benefits to 501c3. There are also disadvantages with 501c3, which I've cited momentarily. So the pastor before me decided to remain autonomous, and likewise I followed him in terms of remaining autonomous from any restraints of the government regulatory system with respect to 501c3. We're separate, we're apart, we respect the government, we respect those regulations, we give honor to whom honor is due, but at the same time, we have a right, as Thomas Jefferson has written, as First Amendment, to be autonomous and advocate religion and advocate betterment for mankind through the religion and so forth.
So forth. Oh, okay, I see. Okay, now, are your parishioners able to take a tax deduction for their donations to your church?
They're able to take a tax deduction because the 501c3 just makes the church more eligible for other government programs and benefits and federal grants with dollars and so forth and so on. But there's other categories that makes the church tax exempt without having to have a 501c3.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, we're asking because we don't want our listeners to hang up and start checking around town. They're free to do so. But here on the West Coast, that's kind of the law. If they're going to get tax-deductible donations, then, of course, that 501c3 must be in place. I'm going to move away from that since it was brought up. Let me say this. There's a lot of rebellion. It's a lot of troubled minds. There's a lot of mental illness moving across the land. And some of the officials are saying mental illness is part and parcel for the upsurge in crime and people running to and fro, just committing some of the most heinous acts ever known to man. Would you say that that's also part of the breakdown of society, the breakdown of America?
Yes, there's two parts to it, Doug. One is the mental illness part, perhaps part one. The other part is part two, a failure of our society to address fervently drug users, illegal drug abuse or drug addiction. Let me say drug addiction. So the mental illness part has been out there for many, 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 many years. And I'm not certain we have enough institutions and enough practitioners to address that disease, because my understanding, it is a disease. So more needs to be done in that area, and certainly those who need help should have a place to go and get help. And if they are mentally ill, they shouldn't have a right to certain let me say this, they shouldn't have a right to purchase firearms. There should be some way to cross-check dot I's and cross the T to preclude a person who's unstable from procuring a firearm. But I don't want to change the subject. Now, part B, the drug addiction, this opium addiction is spreading nationwide. And we need to, as a society, get out on the front side of that. And if we don't, there are many that are dying overdoses here in the Washington metropolitan area. And it will continue. So there needs to be more treatment facilities and counseling and so forth of and revenue, or shall I say, money is appropriated for those two areas, mental illness and drug addiction.
Well, before we close on this session, and I tell you, I learned so much from you every time you. You open your mouth every time you speak. But I want to say this. What do you think really is the real solution behind what we see going on? Something somewhere has failed someone. What do you think is the real solution to turning the tide in America? And I'm not going international right now. In America, family breakdown when it comes to rising in crime, when it comes to these unconscionable shootings. What is really the solution?
My recommendation, Doc, that the solution is found in principles that existed before time began. And there are principles that are written in the oldest book, whatever one may want to call it, or one may want to call it Holy Writ, one may want to call it Holy Bible, another might want to call it Quran, whatever one might want to reference that book, and that we have to return to our belief in a supreme being, whatever we may call that supreme being, whatever faith, whatever religion, whatever denomination one may believe in, because with men it is impossible, but with that supreme being, all things are possible. So we have turned away from the creator of the universe, and we have turned to our own understanding, and as a result of turning to our own understanding, in the book that I study, it said there is a way that seems right about a man, but the end leads to destruction. So if I don't look to that higher power, I don't look to the creator, I don't look to that supreme being, I don't look to the great white spirit for principles of morality, then we will continue to decline in America, and we'll decline in our society, and we'll decline in our families, and thus we'll put ourselves in danger of destroying our own selves.
Oh my goodness, it sounds like we've got to return back to our original roots, our spiritual roots. How would a person get back in touch with God or whatever faith-based a creator that they're claiming is God? How do you think someone could be able to go back? Is it possible and say, okay, creator, I'm sorry. Please help me. Is there a way, and we've got to close out. So very, very quickly, because I want you to give your contact information.
Yes, Doc, they can simply just repent. There's a word called repent, which is asking for forgiveness, and call on that creator by whatever name that they may feel comfortable with, and ask him to forgive them of their sins and to save them from destruction. And that creator is faithful and just to hear them and forgive them and cleanse them from their sins.
Thank you very much, Dr. Harrison. How can we reach you?
Via email, wharri1943@aol.com.
We got 30 seconds.
Yes, on the World Wide Web, webs.com. I can be reached through those two mediums, Doc.
Colonel Harrison, thank you as usual from last week to this week. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I'm sure the listeners learned quite a bit again. And, of course, you did open up their eyes to what really is a solution for America. Thank you, Dr. Harrison.
God bless you. Thank you, Doc. Bye-bye.
You too.